Thank you, Ken. 2 weeks off. It's like I actually totally enjoy my time here in the sanctuary. So yeah, I'll utilize it in other ways. Hopefully geared towards God, you know. Yeah. Hi, Cheryl. I've enjoyed everybody's sharing, and I wanted to thank you, Ken, for playing those Mary Read audios. I really don't remember her last interview, and so I look forward to hearing again this evening what she has to say. Had no idea her story was, gosh, so dramatic in some ways. But I loved the way she talked about prayer. I just love her simple language. I love the fact that, you know, this was a spontaneous sort of awakening for her. It didn't have anything to do with, you know, working hard at it or effort or trying or, you know, years and years and years of, you know, spiritual practice and all of that. It was, yeah, not complicated by concepts. So yeah, that was that's sweet to know that obviously that also is a possibility on the road to awakening. And so yes, I look forward to that. And Jacqueline is saying that I think she plans to lead us in some helpful exercises this evening. I would appreciate that. I definitely feel like I still need a lot more work when it comes to self-inquiry. Sometimes feeling stuck when I get to a certain point and not knowing what question to ask, and then trying to remember, you know, to say in prayer, I don't even know what question to ask, and just being quiet with that. And also, I liked the point that she made, which I am so in agreement with, in that, you know, it seems, and I've said this before, it seems easy when we're, you know, sitting in our own little house cave or our own condo cave or apartment cave or wherever it is that, you know, you may reside in some sort of insulation from the external world or from other people, from any, you know, physical interaction to any great degree. And trying to control that so that, in fact, we, you know, don't have to deal with all that that can bring. And it is, in fact, life. And that sentence that she said, nothing ever goes away until it teaches us what we need to know. It's like we can hide all we want, hoping to avoid problems, hoping to avoid conflict, hoping to control, that's really what it amounts to, control my environment such that somebody doesn't touch my thorns. And the Michael Singer talks about that thorn that we choose to have, and it's in a place that, you know, if we turn a certain way, we can bump up against something, and it hurts when, you know, it hurts when our thorn is poked. If you've ever been poked by a rose thorn, which I am several times in a week, poked by rose thorns, they're quite sharp. As a matter of fact, I had one kind of dip into a blood vessel in my middle finger, which is appropriate enough, and my finger kind of blew up. It probably had a little leakage of blood right there, but. And different rose bushes have different thorn characteristics, but they have one thing in common, and that's that they're really sharp. And those thorns are our problems, which is what Reverend Gloria was speaking about this morning in her sharing from Peace Pilgrim. how normally we see problems as that thorn that we want to avoid. We don't want to be pricked by that problem. We don't want to have any conflict. I know for myself, conflict is just like, it just evokes within me that, like, ugh, I just so seem to despise conflict, external conflict. It feels like I can deal easier with the internal conflict in my own mind. But when I see it external to myself or engage in it external to myself, oh, it's just so unpleasant. And so I definitely notice that tendency to want to turn away from it, I don't know, somehow magically hoping what that it just goes away, as if it's, what do I learn from that avoidance? Nothing. Nothing. And so will it ever really go away? No, because it has taught me what I need to know. I haven't been in full openness and acceptance of the problem or seen it as this, marvelous gift that Peace Pilgrim shared with us this morning. This opportunity for, healing. It doesn't always feel that way to me. I would be a liar to say that that is my direct experience every time I experience a difficult problem. So yeah, obviously something that that I need to look further at. Okay, so we're on to experience your perfect soul, which is a joyful path to self-realization. And Mary Read was saying, their greeting to one another where she lives is namaste. And she asked the audience to say that. And there was this solemn, namaste to one another, that greeting of, from the Christ in me to the Christ in you. I acknowledge that. And she's saying, that's not how we say it where we are. It's like, namaste, namaste. I'm greeting the Christ in you. I'm joyous that I recognize the Christ in you. I'm so happy to know this truth of you in community, Where, we have that solemn, like, namaste, like almost this quiet, subdued, like we're not really so happy about that. It's just something we say. So I thought that was a really good point. Are you coming from your heart when you say that? Are you really joyous in your own recognition of your own self? And you're affirming that in your brother or sister that's before you with those words in a genuine, direct way? Or is it just, something that you're saying? Kind of like for me, when I used to go to church at a point when I was, a teenager or a young adult, it was like, Jesus, how many times am I going to say these words and not really mean them? I mean, what's the point of going if the intention isn't really there? And that's what she was, referring to prayer too. How prayer starts out is that idea that I need something or I want something or it's the lottery next. The lottery's really big or, one of those crazy things. I need this, I need that. Will you help me with this problem? As if we want the problem, what? To go away. Please take it from me, God. And we know that that is asking for something that's impossible. God does not violate his own laws, the laws of cause and effect. The law of love that says this problem is your great opportunity for healing. And now you're praying to somebody that you think is an other to help you solve what you perceive as, of course, outside of yourself, and it needs a resolution that you can't solve on your own. And what was Peace Pilgrim saying this morning? I don't help people with their problems in that I tell them cause and effect go together. You cause your own problems, you have to fix your own problems within your own mind. And yes, do we ask for help? Of course. But it's not for the specific problem that we seem to see or seem to experience. It's not the form that we're asking healing for. It's the content, the madness in my own mind. Help me to see this differently. I'm not really, in tune with this great opportunity that seems to be before me. I seem to see a problem. I seem to notice my upset. I seem to have a zillion thoughts about it, which are upsetting as well, and they don't really solve the problem at all. That must be where the resolution needs to take place. And because I'm stuck in that quagmire, I need help. I need help. And we remember to stop and ask. Father, what would you have me see in this situation that I just can't see? And we wait. We rest, accept, and trust that the answer is there. There never was a problem. We made the problem up to begin with. Okay, enough of that. I just can't help but see so often, how so many, how everybody that speaks today, everybody that spoke, there's so many threads that tie it all together, and I so appreciate that. So we're reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. Again, it's that joyful namaste. And we've been reading from chapter 4, which is Catherine Piedrick's section. And the following quotes by Catherine Piedrick are from the book The Practical Mystic: How to Make Perfection Appear. And we left off. Gosh, is my mic back, guys? I don't know what's going on with that. That happened this morning when I was reading as well. Thanks for letting me know. We shall gain the spiritual apprehension of man, and so of our true selfhood, by, and this is all in caps, guys, by the substitution of the activity of divine mind for all phenomena of sense experience. So again, this, substituting the activity of divine mind when we notice ourselves in any kind of sense experience. And this says all phenomena of sense experience, however that might appear to you. When we notice ourselves caught up in that phenomena, we substitute the activity of divine mind instead. We turn away, we cut it off. We cut the story off, we cut the idea off, we cut the judgment off, we cut the concept off. We just cut it off when we notice it. And that helps us to be grounded in a true selfhood. It lets go of this spiritual apprehension of man, and it grounds us without apprehension. There is no apprehension in the activity of divine mind, and that's why we're being asked to substitute when we notice ourselves in sense experiences that are upsetting. When we say that the activities of spirit constitute all being, we make a definition of being which is all-inclusive, that the physical is left out in this definition of being, and that's with a capital B, is a little startling at first, but nevertheless, very much to be rejoiced over. Such a definition does not annihilate the physical order, but shows that it has always belonged to the realm of false sense and never to that of real being. all the material beliefs which appear as the physical world come under the head of that which is not so, and the appearance of a false conception is also false, but the sign of nothing. This physical so-called world is such a sign. Yeah. The heading of that which is not so, that would be all material beliefs. And from those beliefs, we're told in the loop, you know, what I think, I see. So then we see a physical world. And then what I see, I think about some more. So it stays in a closed loop. But it's saying this is a false conception, a sign of nothing. The whole world is such a sign and appears under the heading of that which is not so. It sounds like something from Harry Potter, you know, he who must not be named. All the material beliefs which appear as the physical world come under the head of that which is not so. And the appearance of a false conception is also false, but the sign of nothing. This physical so-called world is such a sign. The whole problem has thus reduced itself to two minds. One suppositional and the other real. And this gives us the keynote to all effective work. To successfully unsee evil, we must direct our efforts not toward a denial of that is not, but toward a realization of the perfection which is. And that couldn't be any more. It already exists. It already exists. That's huge. To successfully unsee evil, we must direct our efforts not toward a denial of that which is not, but toward a realization of the perfection which is. It already exists. And that goes hand in hand with today's lesson in our gentle healing group. Let me perceive everything exactly as it is. Let everything be exactly as it is, not perceive. Let everything be exactly as it is. Perception will still see whatever is going on, whatever seems to be happening, even if it's perceived as a disturbance, an upset, a problem, an issue, something outside of myself, evil. It's saying evil here. We're not asked to deny that. That's not what that's saying. Like, oh, that's not happening. And there's somebody in front of me. I'm making this up. Somebody in front of me, and he's smacking somebody else in the face. If that's happening, it's not like you go, they're the perfect sons and daughters of God, and nothing's really happening here. It's all just my imagination. There is no world. On one level, that's really true. There is really nothing going on here. But in a relative world, we're not asked to deny that. It's just, it's not even, at least for me, it's not even possible to do that. It seems asinine to even use these words in that way. Michael Singer said it in a funny way. When somebody asked him a question one time, he said something that was, something like, don't get stupid on me, or something like that, where he's like, come on, don't try to use these words and twist them into something that is not what I'm saying. So right here it's telling us it seems as if, the whole problem can be reduced to two minds. One that's suppositional, and that would be the ego voice that we made up and seem to listen to. But we might ask ourselves, who is it that's listening to this, what seems to be other voice? How is it I can be that voice, and yet I seem to notice that voice in my mind? So again, two minds, the one that we seem to listen to or take orders from, and then the real mind, the awareness that is the one mind. And it says that's the keynote to all effective work. To successfully unsee the evil, we have to direct our efforts not in denying that which is not. And he said that which is not is the world, the physical world, and every material belief in it. But he says, direct your attention, and that would be the attention that sees that crazy voice and says, that is not even real. I will turn myself around toward that which is noticing, the noticer, the perfection which is, that already exists. I wouldn't even be able to notice this other crazy mind without that perfection, without that existence. I exist, and turn towards that perfect I. After the analysis has revealed the thoughts which are untrue, the next step is to see that although the untrue beliefs have seemed to be presented to us, yet they can never be accepted as true by a truth-knowing capacity. They and their appearances are always outside of my real self. They are apparently trying to gain admittance to the realm of the real, yet always in vain. This takes away our fear. No matter what seems to happen, our real natures are as untouched by illusion as is the gold by the earth which clings to it. Thank God. Looking at the thoughts that are untrue, looking at the thoughts that are untrue. Sometimes, when I'm noticing my thoughts, or noticing myself in condemnation of someone else or myself, or noticing myself in judgment of what's going on. One simple question can really stop that train. And that's, what a healed mind be thinking about this in this way? Would a healed mind see this in this way? And with that, simple question alone, I can return my attention inward and ask for help. If one demonstrably knows the truth, is consciously joyous, loving, and good, in spite of the temptations of the mortal mind. He experiences a feeling that he is being himself, as indeed he is. All the fruits of the Spirit, peace, joy, love, are ours to experience, whereas thoughts of pain, doubt, loneliness, discouragement, malice, selfishness, and loss really cannot be real experiences of ours, because they are not experienced by infinite mind. We must realize that being is spiritual and there is no other. Spiritual consciousness alone is life. To realize this truth is to realize that there is no material sense of being. In reality, then, we have no physical structures. And I'll pause there just for a second, because I think those very words were used again this morning in Peace Pilgrim's sharing, where she was speaking about the emphasis on the material sense. How all of our efforts are generally directed in that direction. And with the intense desire to awaken from, you know, the disappointment that inevitably happens, the disillusionment that inevitably happens, the discouragement that inevitably happens in the pursuit of all material sense. You know, we seem to leave no stone unturned in that search until we come to a point of desperation. It doesn't have to be that way, but oftentimes suffering seems to be a really big motivator for many, many people to turn in another direction. Personal problems. Those things that we seemingly try to avoid that can give us, you know, the greatest gifts in our healing. Opportunities. We were told this morning they were, you know, huge opportunities. So we can use that same material sense and not deny that Regina talked about, I want the Mercedes that has a convertible top, and I want to be able to drive it on a sunny day and have the wind blow through my hair, and I'm going to be, you know, looking good and feeling groovy, and that's going to make me happy. And it's not that, you know, we're asked to forego that if that really seems to be an intense desire, but the degree of happiness that is experienced initially, it will wane. It's not going to be as exciting 5 years from now, when you have your dent in the side of your Mercedes from the grocery cart debacle, or, you know, there's always something that is going to come in to make that material sense not as exciting, not as happy, not as joyous, not as grand as you had wanted it to be. And so it becomes untrue to, in some way, shape, or form, that these things can bring us lasting happiness. To thus see that the material sense and its thoughts are untrue is also to reveal as unreal the appearances called the physical world. For if a so-called mind is unreal, its projections are manifestly unreal also. The material sense appearances called bones, muscles, etc., represent the fictitious thoughts of what we call the mortal mind. And as we realize true spiritual being, its own embodiment will appear. Since real life is spiritual, it is utterly divorced from so-called organic physical being. All so-called physical processes and organs are a seeming, a part of the veil. And this reminds me of when Regina was in one of the tips where she was speaking about the what is the body section. And one of the points that she was referring to was the idea that we think that awareness is contained within the body. Right? It's within me. It's my awareness, not your awareness. You have a different awareness than my awareness. You would have to if you were in a body, says a body. Because right now, you know, I'm aware that I'm sitting in my bedroom and you're not sitting there with me. Your awareness is wherever you are. So they must be different awarenesses, says the body. The body mind. That's that notion of usurping truth, which is that awareness is not contained. It's eternal, ever expanding, uncontainable. And the false mind, the fictitious mind, the material sense, mortal mind, not the infinite mind, says that awareness is mine. And that's simply a reflection of a belief in that mind, in that false mind that we're being told here is fictitious, made up, unreal. And if it's unreal, its projections, which is the whole world, are unreal as well. And any physical process is part of that veil. And it's telling us real life is spiritual, and it's utterly divorced from the so-called organic physical being. To rest ourselves, we turn away from corporeal consciousness, which holds thought as dependent upon the physical. There you go. And realize that all of our real activity is spontaneous and tireless, for it is spiritual and involved in spirit. I love that. All our real activity is spontaneous and tireless. It reminds me of A Course in Miracles, that piece that says, you are very capable of wearying yourself. And so if there's that noticing within the mind of, I'm just wiped out, I'm emotionally drained, I'm physically worn out, all of these concepts that start running through the mind and are reinforced with further thought, if we notice that, we can put an end to it right away. We turn away from that consciousness, that corporeal consciousness that says, that whole, it says, which holds thought as dependent upon the physical. And we realize instead that all real activity, and it started off with calling that vine activity of the mind. And that activity is spontaneous. It's not occurring from, a past realm or in some future realm or in some space that I'm not. It's what is right here, right now. Life is right now. And that spontaneous, real, divine, all-knowing activity is tireless. And that should be the experience that as that channel that I experience. That's how we know. That can be a sign of like knowing. You can just go and go and go. Good to go. And when you're to rest, you'll be told to rest. Mankind has much to learn upon a spiritual basis. This can only be effected by leaving the old landmarks and making a new beginning in the spiritual direction by using the spiritual consciousness alone as a means of knowing all truth. Use the spiritual consciousness alone. And we're not bad if we notice the even if it's the spiritual consciousness of man distorting what might be said. We can notice that. I mean, truly, we can notice everything with discernment. And I'm sure we each have questions that prompt us in our own individual way back to clarity. Some of us might rely on how I'm feeling emotionally. What feelings am I looking at our feelings specifically, looking at sensations within the body? Am I tense? Is my stomach upset? Am I focusing on my arthritis in my hands and placing my awareness into that arthritis as if it's me? Or am I stepping back from that ache while it's occurring, knowing full well that there's something that sees that, there's something that feels that, but I am not that. Do I have to indulge that with every bit of my consciousness, with every bit of my attention? And does that help it? Does that help it? If my full attention is on some sort of pain, as if there's no relief in sight, does it make it better? Or does it seem to drag me down into a deeper hole? I mean, what cost is it to me if I recognize there's no joy here? I may as well turn my attention away from that, even as the pain seems to continue, and turn towards something different than that. And see what's going on there instead. That might be more rewarding, more interesting, more helpful, more joyous, more loving, more caring, more kind, sweeter. Why not? That's that new beginning in the spiritual direction of spiritual consciousness alone. And that's the means of knowing all truth. Yeah, Cindy, just plain old relief sometimes. Yeah. We see the prison house we've made for ourselves and how uncomfortable it is, how restricting it is. And it's like, Jesus, give yourself a break just for a holy instant, for God's sake. And let's not forget, as was shared in our Reverend Gloria's sermon this morning, and Peace Pilgrim talked about the collective consciousness. If I'm deciding to indulge my personal pain, however that might appear, that's the gift that I then put out into the code. Is that really what I want to give? If I say I truly want my own mind to be healed, is that how I'm going to go about it, by indulging the suffering? So this is the last piece of Catherine Piedrick's sharing. On page 134, middle of the page, it's called Illusions and Their Conditions Are Unnecessary. Illusions and their conditions are unnecessary. That's not confusing. Pretty straightforward, no fluff. Illusions and their conditions are unnecessary. It is the allowing wrong assertions, illusory beliefs, to present themselves to us without contradicting them, which makes us subject to such illusory appearances as sorrow, fatigue, failure, and sin. We sometimes may be obliged to learn this nothingness of things by apparently going through the valley of loss. But the so-called loss of things is only illusory, since we cannot lose by letting the unreal go. Surely we must rejoice when we know that all good, beauty, truth, peace, strength, love, and power, our, ours, throughout all time. If whatever may happen, we realize perfection, there is no possibility of our experiencing or expressing anything else. Reality is perfect. And now, one may say, I know what I am. So again, back to the beginning. It is the allowing wrong assertions or illusory beliefs, and we don't contradict them, or we don't notice them, maybe. We're not aware of what's going on within consciousness. We're using consciousness, obviously. I mean, you are conscious. You do exist. I am aware of something, a seeming something. Am I paying attention to what that is? Or am I simply like, as Bentinho calls it, like a sheeple? A person, going through life, seemingly just led by my nose, as if I have no control. What am I doing? Am I allowing these wrong assertions, these false beliefs, these same old thoughts that I've had for years and 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 years? Am I still believing those thoughts? Am I no longer, am I questioning those thoughts now? Am I at least taking the time to notice the old record playing, or to see that habitual behavior or that reaction, the games I play, the lack of honesty within myself, the ways I lie to myself? Am I using everything that would promote illusory appearances, that would fortify a false world, that would show me sorrow, fatigue, failure, sin daily, daily? Am I looking at that in a different way and asking to see this differently? Still noticing, obviously we're being asked, do notice, please do notice. Even if your mind is caught 99.9% of the time into this sorrow, fatigue, failure, and sin, notice it. That's where your escape starts. And then it says sometimes I may be obliged to learn this nothingness of things by apparently going through the valley of loss. So I'm choosing this loss. It's not like we can't say with each of us individually, within our own self, that we don't sometimes have that inkling or that intuition or that knowing that, hey, you know what? I could do it differently right now, but you know what? I'm not going to. I'm going to take that drink. I'm going to do those drugs. I'm going to be mean to this person I say I love. I'm going to use those same ugly words. I'm going to, we see ourselves making those choices daily. And then try to say, we're what, victims of ourselves without taking responsibility for that? And that's that choice to learn the nothingness of things. And this is telling us that that's only illusory. I'm using everything and everyone seemingly outside of myself to show me what it is I need to see. And then blaming them for showing me, refusing to see what they're showing, refusing to see what they're showing me as a gift, an opportunity to learn, and instead going back to old habits where I twisted into blame, shame, guilt, sacrifice, hate, vengeance. Knowing full well the prison house. That's insanity. The line, but the so-called loss of things is only illusory, since we can't lose by letting unreal go. We can't lose. We can only gain by letting the unreal go. There is no loss in reality. There's only fullness, wholeness, completion. What is? And that's the substitution we began this with. We're being asked to substitute that gift, that treasure, for the prison house we've made ourselves. And then he says, surely you must rejoice to know that all good, beauty, truth, peace, strength, love, and power are ours throughout all time. You'd think we'd be like hopping up and down, doing, you know, the boogie dance, partying, having, rejoicing. Namaste. You'd think we'd be like over the moon. It says, if whatever may happen, we realize perfection, there's no possibility of our experience or of our experiencing or expressing anything else. Reality is perfect. Reality is perfect. And now one may say, I know what I am. I'm reality. I'm perfect. I'm not separate from that. And that is the ending of Catherine Piedrick's section. Quite beautiful. She was my inspiration a while ago now to pick up this book initially. Yeah, so our next section, I know I still have about 6 minutes left. It will be chapter 5, Inexperience Your Perfect Soul. And it's going to be Eva Bell Werber. And she had a book called The Voice of the Master. And Michael Langford selected the following quotes by Eva Bell Werber from the book, The Voice of the Master, as direct path quotes. The whole book, Experience Your Perfect Soul, were selections by Michael Langford from these various authors. And so far we have read through W. Norman Cooper, It's kind of funny because on the back of the book, he says powerful quotes by W. Norman Cooper, Catherine Piedrick, Joel S. Goldsmith, Eva Bell Werber, William Samuel, Elise Morgan, and Ruby Nelson. And so we are going to be reading from Eva Bell Werber, and it's called This Book. Truly, I am the door by which you enter the garden of this book. And already, at least within me, I feel a shift, as if, and I'm just going to use God because I like God. I like the word God. I don't have any issues with God. Using that word, the voice of God is speaking to me directly. That's how this feels to me. Truly, I am, and that's the God, that's the self within myself, myself. No separation. Truly, I am the door by which you enter the garden of this book. There, Wrapped in the warmness of my love, you shall abide, while I bring lessons and truths which I would have you know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that makes you guys feel, but that just like makes me want to cry. I invite you to walk in this garden of love with me, letting me guide and direct you, showing you the beauties of a life lived from my high point of consciousness. Sometimes we shall not even talk together, but rest quietly in sweet communion, drinking deep of a holy peace. Read each day some little part, then go forth, putting its teachings into practice in your daily life and affairs, and you may prepare to accept the blessings which will pour upon you from my full storehouse. Enter the garden. In an instant's turning of the thought back within you, severing it from the things of the outer realm where men function and work and play, you can be within this garden of reality, away from the world of illusion. There, as in another realm, we walk together, and you learn from me the lessons of higher truth which I can give in no other way. You will be calm and poised through all circumstances, for you shall not again put on the dusty sandals nor the musty robe, but shall don the new robes of higher consciousness. And that's the end of that little piece called Enter the Garden. And my time is very close to being over, so I am going to finish with that. I will be beginning next week. I'm sorry, is next week? Yeah, I think it's next week. On page, let's see. I started on page, hang on. Let me find the bookmark. Hang on. Cheryl, be patient with me. I'll type it on the board. Let me give up the mic to Rebecca. I think it's Rebecca's time, and I'll just post it here. Let me let go of the mic. I thank you all for joining me, and see you guys later.